You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Game four between the Nets and the Bucks from Fiserv Forum out in Milwaukee. The Nets looking to take a commanding 3-1 lead in that series. And we now bring in the play-by-play man for the Nets, Chris Carino. I believe checking in from Milwaukee, which is a rarity, Chris. Is that true? Are you in Milwaukee for this game?
Yes, I am. I haven't been outside yet, but I think it's still Milwaukee. Yeah, we're traveling for the first time in this series. We were at Game 3, which was great to be back in the building, calling games in person, in the arena. There's really no substitute for it. I think it's better for us doing the game. It's better for the audience listening, and really excited to be back and back to a little bit of normalcy here.
It looked and sounded like a great scene in Milwaukee on Thursday night. Obviously, it was desperation time for the Bucks, especially the way they played the first two games at Barclays Center. Yeah. It seemed like it was a great atmosphere inside Fiserv Forum.
Yeah, it was the first time that they were at 100% capacity inside the arena here in Milwaukee. So they were all excited to be in there. Plus, there were thousands of people that were outside the building watching the game. It was really, they celebrated it. And, you know, whenever you get, above 20 degrees here in Milwaukee, it's great, too. I've never been here when it's so warm. So everybody was excited. And, you know, you get that summertime kind of atmosphere. Everybody came into the building all together for the first time. And they made a difference, especially early. I thought the Bucks, grabbed an early 30-9 lead. And it was, the place was rocking. But then the Nets settled down and made it a game. And, it was an interesting game in Game 3.
What did you make of the game? Because, when you looked at it, especially the way the Nets looked Games 1 and 2 at Barclays Center, I mean, it was stunning. I mean, we haven't seen these Nets, even without James Harden, struggle that much offensively. What did you make of the nature of that Game 3?
Not enough ball movement from the Nets. Their ability to play one-on-one and get isolations and play that way is something that they're so good at. But the Bucks really pack it in, and they don't let you get to the rim. So they'll force you to kind of settle for bad shots. And when I say bad shots, it's sometimes shots that don't come off ball movement. When you're in rhythm, when you're able to penetrate and kick, those are good rhythm jumpers. When you're just sort of standing out of the wing, dribbling a couple of times and then pulling up, that's not a good shot. And they settled for that too much in the game. There was a subtle adjustment. I mean, when they're down 30-9, they go on an 8-0 run that was all Bruce Brown. He scores 8 straight points. And what they're able to do is, when Brown is out there, he plays the center position on offense. So he'll be the screener. When he comes up, he'll roll, and he finds that little, I call it the Brown bubble. It's in the middle, in the paint. And the Bucks played back. So what they would do is, they have Brook Lopez on the floor. They would play him near the rim. And Brown would get that ball in the dotted line area. And he's got an easy floater, and he makes it easily. And it sparked them offensively. And then they got going. They got back into the game. Then it was, close game the rest of the way. In the fourth quarter, what the Bucks did was they played similar, but then they brought Brook Lopez up so that Bruce Brown didn't have an open floater. It was contested, and instead of making the adjustment and get rid of the ball and kicking it back out and the ball moving, Brown was trying to make that same shot again. That's what he missed late in the game. He had another one where it was contested on a layup with about 9 seconds to go. Brook Lopez was lurking. They've got to be able to open it up a little bit, get to the rim, but then they've got to make the better play and move the ball, make sure everybody's touching it. A guy like Joe Harris didn't shoot the ball very well. He missed widely open looks late in the game that he normally makes easily. Kyrie Irving missed some open looks. It wasn't a crisp game offensively, but I think if they get back to making sure they get it inside out and getting more rhythm and more ball movement. And the other thing they've got to do, Pat, they've got to get a little more aggressive going to the rim. I know the Bucks pack it in, and they have good rim protectors in Giannis and Brook Lopez. But the Nets have only attempted 24 free throws in this series. I mean, that's unfathomably low. And to put that in perspective, a guy like Joel Embiid on the Sixers has already attempted 48 free throws himself in three games. The Nets have attempted 24 as a team. Some of that was, game two, it's a blowout. All right, the Bucks weren't playing much defense. They were letting them get wherever they want. But they have to be a little more aggressive going to the rim, I think, here in game four.
Nets radio play-by-play man Chris Carino, our guest, getting us set for Nets-Bucks Game 4 from Milwaukee, where Chris is this afternoon. Nets lead the series 2-1. The way I look at it, and it's to the point you just made, Chris, Durant shoots 11 for 28, Kyrie shoots 9 for 22, Harris shoots 1 for 11, and yet the Nets still almost won a game, in which, by the way, they still don't have James Harden playing. I think that bodes well for the Nets, because I don't know that you can count on, if you're Milwaukee, those guys shooting at those poor percentages again.
No, the net, you say that. I think the Bucks have something to do with that as well. But I said that about the Bucks after game one. They were 6 of 30 from the three-point line, and they blew an opportunity with Harden leaving the game in the first quarter, and think, wow, game two, they're going to come out. They're not going to shoot that bad again. They're going to be ready to go. And they got blown out in game two. So I do agree with you, though. It is, if you're a Net fan, you're saying, hey, we didn't play well at all in game three, and yet we were right there. We only scored 83 points, and we almost won the game. So that doesn't, that I think is a positive. I think that's kind of the way the Nets feel about it. I don't think they're killing themselves too much about it. I think the big thing has been the fact, though, that the Nets have played such championship caliber defense in this series, and they have the Bucks completely out of their rhythm offensively. I mean, they've held them now under 90 in two consecutive games. It's a Bucks team that scored 120 a game during the regular season. Remember that was a historic level. That's not just good. I mean, that's historic. And to be able to do what they've done to them, force them in that kind of isolation game, force them into making tough shots. Giannis has put up numbers, but Blake Griffin hasn't made it easy for him. The thing you got to look out for with the Bucks is they've gotten offensively, they've gotten good games from Giannis in this series. Middleton finally kind of broke out in game three. He hadn't done much at all until game three. Who's going to be that other guy that you're going to have that one game where, is it going to be like the Bryn Forbes game or, the Bobby Portis game, something like that? Drew Holiday hasn't really gotten himself going offensively in this series. So that's what you've got to be on alert for if you're the Nets. The offense will come for Brooklyn. They're not, 83 is an anomaly. But can they continue to do the job defensively against the Bucks? It's ultimately going to determine how this series is going to go.
No, that's a great point. And, when you see a team that scores as prolifically as the Nets do, with Kyrie and Durant and Harden when he's there and when they're all clicking, not a lot of attention is paid to the defense. And frankly, for a lot of the regular season, they didn't really need to clamp down the way they've needed to in this series. But this defensive trend, like the defensive improvement, and you're there every game, it started towards the tail end of the regular season, though. It's been trending in this direction defensively, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you could look at it and say it's been trending that way since February. They were outstandingly bad in the first, couple of months of the season. They get to around February, they lost three in a row in mid-February. They lost the game out in Detroit, and they got blown out. And after the game, that was something where Steve Nash went in the locker room. He doesn't go nuts. He doesn't start throwing chairs. But he just said, listen, you guys, this can't be fun. Like competing for a championship, playing at a high level, that's fun. There's going to be stresses along the way, and there's going to be rough times, but just competing. And on the defensive end, a lot of it is competing. And they changed some things schematically. They did a few things differently. Got some players back that were injured, and that helped. But for the most part, it was about, going out and getting after it, competing. The points are coming so easy. You got to dig in on the other end of the floor. And it seemed like from that time, they went on a West Coast trip where they swept it, and they had like an 8-game winning streak. And it seemed to be a little bit of a change in their mentality defensively. And it's gotten progressively better as the season's gone along. And it took a huge leap. And sometimes people think, well, you know, because when they haven't played a lot together, they have so many injuries this year, and guys didn't have a lineup, and guys, you know, sitting out for whatever reason, they had 38 different starting lineups during the course of the year. And that's, people think about offensively the continuity, but defense, you need continuity too. And a week off before the start of the playoffs really helped them. You know, it really helped them kind of simplify some things, get back on track, figure out what they wanted to do, get some practices under their belt, which they hadn't been able to do much during the regular season. And I think it helped them defensively as much as it did anything. And you've seen a big jump. It got better toward the end of the year, but now it's gone to another level, a level that maybe people didn't think they had, and maybe convinced some people that now this is a championship team because they can play that kind of defense.
No, if they play this kind of defense, they're just downright scary, which they might have been anyway. Chris Corino, yeah. The Nets radio play-by-play man, Nets-Bucks game 4, 3 o'clock from Milwaukee. Nets lead it 2-1. That was an interesting note on Nash. I was going to ask you about him. I thought especially in game 1, and game 1 of this series was so huge. I can't imagine what you and Capper were thinking 43 seconds into the game. There was all this build-up to the series, and then Harden goes out. And I, for one, thought it was going to be a very close series, even if Harden was available at 100%. And now they have to go without him. And I thought the adjustments that Nash made in that first game, going to Mike James, that certainly worked. Even in the third quarter, when Kevin Durant picks up his fourth foul and Nash leaves him in, and then he goes and scores 7 straight points. I thought overall Nash really acquitted himself very well, especially in game 1. But, you know, overall, what are you seeing from him in his first go-round as a head coach?
His demeanor, you know, the reasons they brought him in were, you know, they knew he would be, he would have be able to handle stars because he was a star. And he has a demeanor that's not too high, not too low. He's not overbearing. And I think sometimes you have veterans and you have superstar veterans, they'll self-correct a lot. So Steve is there to sort of guide them. But he's not overbearing, and that's not saying that anybody, you know, other coaches that are hands on and are tough and are, you know, fiery and good developmental players or young players, that they're not good coaches. Steve just, it seems to be the right guy for this job, and he had his rough spots early on with game manager and things like that, and you know he's getting better at that, and he's got a great staff. I talked to him before game 2, and you know, when he talked about the Harden situation that you mentioned, you know, him going out, I mean, you know, he realized, he goes, you know, I felt as much as trying to scramble tactically to figure out what we were going to do and change the game plan that we had gone in with, it was really, I was worried about the guys emotionally. And I had to make sure that, you know, their mindset was right, because it was deflating to see Harden go out of the game so early to start a series, especially at the beginning of a series when you've prepared now, you've had 3 days off, you've prepared, James has been part of it, and he's been the glue of this team, and to see him go out, you know, Steve said I had to first, you know, try and make sure they were all in the right mental space, and I think Steve gets that. You know, when you talk about leaving Durant in with 4,000, Steve has been in that situation. Steve's been a point guard at a high level in this league, and he understands. And Durant is such a smart player. He knows. Durant knows how to adjust his game with 4 fouls and how important it is to keep him in there at that point. So I think for all the reasons that people thought Steve Nash might be a good selection for this team, it's all played out in real time this year.
Well, Chris, it's got to feel good for you to be back in a road arena. I'm sure it'll be a lot of fun this afternoon once again. I appreciate you getting us all set up, and we'll see as the playoffs continue.
Pat, always great to talk to you. Yeah, we're excited. This is going to be – this is the crucial game right here. This is – you go up 3-1 or you're tied 2-2. It's hugely different, so really excited about it today.
We're looking forward to it. Thanks again for the time, Chris.
Thanks, Pat.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.